This is a conspiracy. That's what this is.
One big damn conspiracy! And everyone's in on it!
I know what's going on.
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
The person is smart. People are dumb, panicky, dangerous animals, and you know it.
Did you see the memo about this?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
Don't you see what this means? This is it! This is the beginning of everything! I've been waiting for this all my life!
Welcome to episode 54 of your Missing the Point podcast, where we discuss the weird, the wonderful, and the downright bizarre aspects of life as we have conversations with people from all over the world. Today I'm joined by a fellow Aussie, a young bloke that uses his platform to voice the rights of all Australians. He comes from a place founded in strong moral compass and ethics. A man living by his own design, let us welcome the Dunder Viking himself, Harold. Welcome, Harold.
That was a beautiful introduction. Thank you, Drew. Yes, I love that.
No worries at all, mate. I first came across you, we crossed our paths on a Twitter space I was hosting that long ago called What's Your Craziest Conspiracy Theory? And you really piqued my interest when somehow we got onto the conversation of you've been on a carnivore diet for a while now. At that point, I'd only just started my journey on carnivore. And we even got into the idea of how the modern day food system, even the ancient food system, was weaponized for food. They weaponized it against mankind. So that instantly piqued my interest, and I've wanted to chat to you about this ever since. But before we do start, I'm going to have to give this little note for the listeners.
This video is for general information purposes only. The content seen or read should not be used as medical advice. No doctor or patient relationship is formed. Use of the information or links on this video or channel are at the user's own risk. This information does not substitute medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please seek medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment for any medical concerns, big or small. Please do not delay seeking such help based on content of this video or channel. Thank you very much.
Now that garbage is out of the way, let's get stuck into this. Before we start, can you give a little bit of an intro about who you are and where you're from?
Yeah, all right. Terrific. Well, I'm from Queensland. I'm guessing most of the audience is Australian, so central Queensland up in the Whitsundays. You know, keeping this focused on health and fitness, I got interested for the first time when I was still at high school. My mates were going to the gym, invited me along. I was always a farm boy, so pretty solid, and wanted to beat them on the bench press, and that sort of started a journey there onwards of, you know, I love to say just waking up feeling great every day. That was my goal. No more than that, because I didn't want to wake up with puffy eyes. So I was trying to find solutions as to why that was happening and how to get around it. But alongside that health and fitness journey, I mean, I simply found people who were in a better position than me and copied them. So yeah, I've done quite a bit, I guess. In that period of time, I was at university for a little while, dropped out, then went into sales and business. And that's really been my current career for a good period of time. Got interested in blockchain and cybersecurity and things. And now I work from home on the farm, eating my own meat, very soon to hopefully be milking my own cow. I didn't know at the time, but living a life a lot of people are now trying to achieve, which I'm very fortunate to be able to do this.
Isn't it wild that people are striving for a lifestyle that the majority of humanity has had since its inception? That's only the slight tweaks and changes in the past 100 to 200 years which we've deviated as a culture and society.
Spot on. It really is. You know, and I was watching some clips yesterday, and you know, the medieval peasant, they didn't work as long as we work. They did not have as much stress as we have. I know the peasant dream was actually just to lie on their back all day and dream of the world. I wish I should find that for you, but that was their dream. They didn't have any real ambitions. They just wanted to enjoy life. But they also, with their time, they created beautiful things because they had that extra time. They could focus on things to give them inspiration in life. Whereas now, obviously, we just work nearly 24/7.
Yeah, we live to work, that's for sure.
We
Before we get
do.
started, how old are you, by the way?
28.
28.
Yeah.
Right. And you are built like a brick shit house, by the way. So I'm not surprised that the gym stuff is there. Definitely fits the Viking theme with the beard and the build, mate. So
Thank
let
you.
now getting into the crux of this conversation, carnivore. Now, I take it as someone who's been in the gym quite a bit, you've probably gone through every single fad of shredding, of putting on mass and diets and all sorts of things. What got you on the path of carnivore?
Yep. So rightly so, I have tried many methods. So I couldn't I got started in the idea of biohacking. And this was quite early, 2014, 2015. And I just again, I can't tell you exactly how I stumbled upon it, but a few names: Dave Asprey, Ben Greenfield, you may have heard of,
Yep,
and
I sure
listeners
have.
may have. Excellent. So, I really attached to their mindset, right? Getting the maximum results with minimum effort. And I wanted to bring that to the gym. So I followed a lot of their advice, and I was also always just focused on the nutrition aspect of what is okay. It's a little bit complicated because I was pretty busy. We are all busy working, right? So for me to also work out at the gym and achieve the results that I have, well, it took a lot of commitment there as well, alongside, my career and so forth. So yeah, I had to find effective ways to do things, and I had to feel good and eat really well nutritionally. So they're some gentlemen that I learned from for quite a period of time. I one idea I had, and obviously all young men, they want to have abs, they want to be huge. I kind of just had the idea, well, I'll just keep lifting weights until I build a bit enough muscle so that the muscle overtakes the fat. And somewhat I achieved that. But so what have I tried? I guess I started with the 6 meals a day thing for a long period. Actually, Hugh Jackman, I was watching reading his meal plans. Here it is. Hugh Jackman, that was where I first started, actually. I thought he looked excellent in Wolverine and wanted to replicate a lot of his results. This is very early days, sorry. I was still making the same sandwiches that my mum made me for school, right? Two pieces of wholemeal bread, tomato, lettuce, beetroot, and some sort of meat in between. And that was also from him the first time I encountered intermittent fasting. Couldn't believe it. There was such a thing. Like, even when I was at high school, I remember my Muslim friend who was practicing Ramadan. I said to him, "How can you not have breakfast, the most important meal of the day, right?" And I feel so foolish having said that now,
Oh, what
considering
a
that I
psyop.
never
That
have
little tagline
it.
is most important meal of the day in air quotes.
Yeah, exactly. So that was actually that, and that was just as I left high school, 2014. And that was a whole new world for me that I got into, because gym was not part of my family's life at all. We're farmers, very disconnected from it all. So yeah, 6 meals a day. Intermittent fasting from copying Hugh Jackman, and the 6 meals a day thing was just a lot of work, and I never really committed to that at all. So I started looking for more effective ways to eat my meals, right? And I went on this whole journey of one point I got a big pot from IKEA. I don't know, it must have been a 20-liter pot, and I would grab every bean I could find at Woolworths, just mix it all together. I'd go to the local markets and buy spinach, kale, all these different herbs and spices. Literally, it was just a big broth with mints and everything chucked in together. Didn't taste the best, I will admit, but hey, it got the results, right? I was again just looking for an effective method to achieve results. I didn't really care too much about the taste at the time. I tried going vegetarian for one night because I started reading that Arnold Schwarzenegger was doing it, and some other people, but that was again only one night, very short-lived. But I'll just say, growing up, right, we lived on a farm, we had our own meat. Every night, traditional Western style dinner, meat with the vegetables. Always eat the vegetables first because I'm a good boy, and then I would always enjoy that meat. And I would usually go back for seconds. So I was never concerned about eating too much meat. I read the, causes cancer and stuff, but I kind of didn't believe that ever, I guess, because it's such a natural thing to eat. We were always eating it. I just didn't really understand how that could eventuate. Yeah, so I always have eaten a large amount of meat in my diet, I will say. I have a number of allergies as well, so that's kept me quite clean with my diets. I'm allergic to fish, eggs, nuts, so that does limit me.
Wow, carnivore with no eggs. That is limiting.
Yeah,
I am eating
exactly.
so many eggs at the moment. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, so I can't even touch them. Like, if we had an egg fight when I was a kid, wherever the eggs hit me, I came up with big welts. No, it's not too severe. You won't kill me with it, but it slowed me down.
Interesting. Now, going back to when you were at the gym, did you find that any one given trend or type of eating habit or style that you got into had greater results than any other? Or has your current eating habits, does that outweigh those in any capacity?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would say now is definitely much more optimal because you want to heal fast. You don't want to be inflamed or swollen. And I definitely was a lot more swollen when I was, because I used to eat a lot of porridge, right? Again, breakfast was my most important meal. Huge amounts of porridge, sometimes in the afternoons as well. Love my milk as well. Easily drink a liter of milk a day. Still do drink the milk. I'm happy to, but I will put on weight much faster if I'm consuming a lot of milk. There's a lot of sugar in milk as well. Sugar and fat, when you have those two together, that's when you'll put on the weight, I found. So I would say right now, on a clean, just meat diet, definitely supports my goals the most. And I'd say that's because fat, right? I wasn't eating enough fat when before, and that was probably a consequence of my mother, who's completely changed now, but she was very onto low fat diet. As I think many of us were looking at that, go back maybe 5, 10 years. But the fat is so important for your hormones. You're not going to have enough, and by you eating eggs, right, you're getting all the cholesterol you need. I got into podcasts and learned quite a bit. Have you heard of Mind Pump?
I have, yeah.
Yeah,
That's one
they
that
were
got into.
terrific. They were a terrific educational source for me in my gym journey. And I know Paul said, no, that's the guy from Italy. What's his name? Anyway,
Ah.
from the podcast. He would always sit, talk about how when he's consuming a huge amount of eggs, that's when he could put on the most muscle. I think he suggested as a consequence of the cholesterol. So I always have a lot of butter with my meat. If you see my morning
I
breakfasts, I
have,
always have a
yeah.
large amount of butter. There you go.
So this is the thing that got me. I seem to see two main reasons for people going into carnivore. One is that they want to get gains in the gym, air quote, that seem to be more natural, more beneficial. And then there's the group of people that go into carnivore for health reasons. And that seems to be one that's standing out more and more lately. For me, when I was in
Yes.
the gym, I was similar to yourself. I tried every possible eating combination, and the similar to you, I went down the route of eating protein-rich vegetables and having plenty of
Yep.
carbs for energy, and I'd find that my strength was always gaining and always lifting heavier and getting stronger,
True,
but
100%.
I always had that skinny fat on me. I couldn't shed the fat. I'd get some gains, and the strength would be there, but I wouldn't really get any further. I kind of plateau, and it's interesting. I haven't even really attempted going to the back to the gym at the moment because my journey on carnivore for the past 5 weeks has been purely based around health. I had some slight health issues before and after Christmas, which for the most part, anecdotally, have kind of cleared up just being on carnivore. And I'm quite interested to see what that's going to be like when I do go back to the gym, how my energy levels will be, strength ratio, putting on muscle mass, how that's going to eventuate for myself.
Yeah. Well, one consequence of me having my allergies, I'm quite sensitive to new stimulus, especially foods. So how something affected me, I could tell if it was positive or negative. And a big part of that, when I'm eating those carbohydrate meals and going to the gym, right, you'd be familiar with the midday slump. Okay, that was a killer because I used to drive Uber. And if I got an Uber trip after lunch, taking me from South Brisbane to the airport, going through that tunnel was a dangerous trip, trying to keep the eyes open. But it's completely avoidable. It's a consequence of when you have carbohydrates, glucose spikes, and that glucose spike makes you sleepy, right? So keep all your carbohydrates for the afternoon or in the evening when you're relaxing. Definitely not in the morning. Absolute worst advice we've ever been given. Having breakfast cereals, bananas, anything that's carbohydrate for breakfast. It ruins your entire momentum for the day.
That always used to get me because I'm a teacher and I'd hit that 3:30-itis at the end of the day. I'd hit that slump. I'm tired. The first thing I'd do is I'd go home. I'd make a massive coffee, and I'd have like 5 or 6 Tim Tams with it because I've got that sugar fix. I have a sweet tooth, and I'm actually surprised after 5 weeks of being on carnivore, I was expecting to have almost the sugar DTs, like some kind of teething issue or period. I didn't have it. I found that because there's so much fat in this diet, I was always full. I always felt satisfied in what I
ate. Satiated is the word.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I miss breakfast. I don't eat until about 11 o'clock when it's our morning tea.
Yeah.
And then after lunch and dinner, the protein and the fat combinations, it's just leaves me satiated. I don't have a need to go into those little sweets for a little bit of a pick-me-up or even the likes of idea, a pack of chips. Like, I don't have any of your quintessential junk food cravings at all. And I was expecting that. I was really expecting that was going to be a hard thing, and it never eventuated.
A lot of people seem to expect that's going to come, but I think that's also a sign you're eating how you naturally should be. You know, you haven't got these external attachments, addictions, let's call them, because that's what it more so becomes. The body is actually getting the nutrition it needs, so you don't have those external desires. Do you add a lot of salt to your food?
I do, yeah. I have a little bit of salt with the steak and whatnot, yeah.
Yeah, salt, depending how active you are, I sweat a lot, especially with my workouts, so salt's quite important. But when you do go carnivore, most processed foods are full of salt. So once you cut that out, just something consciously, I have a teaspoon of salt every morning with my creatine and a lot of salt on my meat. If I don't, I definitely get cramps.
Fair enough, man. It's one of these diets that I see, the more you learn about it, the more you realize you have misconceptions that are rightfully so kind of being put on by the medical establishment because they have their air quotes science and what's established medical science. That you think by growing up in the system, following the food pyramid, doing as your GP told you, that you've been doing the right thing all along. But what I'm finding out more and more through my research and experiencing this and talking to people is that these are misconceptions even the medical establishment has had, and it's so far ingrained that it's really taking a cognitive flip even for the experts to come around to recognize the benefits of this diet.
It certainly is. And there's, you know, if you look back, there's a lot of historical or medical old texts on this, high fat diets, low carbohydrate diets. Medical experts getting their head around it. Yeah, great point. Because my parents have actually been following the strictest of strict carnivore diets now for 5 to 6 years. So not a single fruit or vegetable, and I can say that 100% with certainty, because I'm the only one who'll go into the orchards that we have and maybe pick a mandarin or get some bananas off the trees. My parents now leave them. But where I'm going is my father and mother and myself, no doubt, have very high cholesterol. The doctors are very concerned about that. So obviously they've been recommended statins and so forth. My parents will completely refuse that. And so the doctor said to go get a coronary artery scan to see the calcification of the arteries. So my father went and did that. And the ranges are, I'm not going to give this exactly right, but just to give the idea, right? 0 to 10, you're in perfect health. 10 to 100, you're pretty much normal probably. 100 to 200, start to worry. 200 to 400, you've got a ticking time bomb, right, for the heart attack. My father scored a 0. And he literally will, after dinner, if he's still hungry, pick up the plate that we cooked the roast in and drink the saturated fat. Again, I guess it runs in the family. We can handle the taste. My grandfather used to just mix. I remember working for him one day, beetroot, tuna, baked beans, and all in a pot, mix it up, old school. But anyway, completely pristine health, right? Cholesterol is not the thing that clogs up your arteries and causes the problems. The cholesterol is actually trying to clean out the arteries. So I understand it is, if there's a fire in the neighborhood, who do you call? The fireman. So when you drive past that house and you see the fire and then you see the fireman putting out the fire, did the fireman start the fire? No, they're trying to put it out. And that is effectively the role of the cholesterol. Another little just fun fact on that is when I was learning about this, centenarians, who are the people who live over 100 years old, on average have much higher than average recommended cholesterol. So I just thought, well, if they have it and they're living the longest in the world, that's a very interesting aspect.
Absolutely. And just to divulge, even for the listeners who may not know, so my health issues that kind of started after Christmas was that end of year, lots of work breakups and all those types of things, put a little bit of weight on, as people tend to do, eating the normal diets of the modern day. And I had some pain issues, so I went and saw my doctor, and she did the gamut of tests and checked my bloods and everything, and she said my cholesterol was high. And she gave the associated high factor. She said, I'm edging towards the high end, and I need to go on to a low diet of fats, and I need to eat the right types of foods, vegetables, blah, blah, blah. We'll do a blood test in 6 months. And I looked at it and something didn't sit right with me. I'm a young guy. I know a lot of older people who have got cholesterol that's would be considered sky high, that are well into their 80s, never had any cardiac issues. And I just felt like doing my own research. So I reached out to a gentleman I know through podcasting, and he gave me the breakdown of what modern medicine bases the old whole idea of cholesterol around and some of the misconceptions that that could exist. And I kind of formulated it for myself. But the real kicker for me was that I'm 5'9", so I'm not overly tall.
Same as
and,
me.
And I was weighing 92 kilos at the time, so 5 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And my doctor said, according to my BMI, I'm dangerously overweight, almost to the point where I could be considered obese. And I'm looking at my body fat distribution. I've gone, yeah, I've got a little bit more on the gut. I've got a little bit of handles there, but it's nothing dangerously high. So that just made me think, what does the system actually know? These are the same types of people who said, trust the science when they pushed magic jibby jabs on people. So that kind of left a sour taste in my mouth for the medical industry.
The BMI has done such a disservice to us, right? I've always been a solid guy. Do you know how self-conscious, and I was incredibly self-conscious when I was a young man, because I was always obese according to that. Yet I'm a muscular guy. I've been working on a farm quite hard. And my mum, I remember she had to grab me one day and say, Lachlan, look at your fingers. Look how thick they are. You're a muscly man. But it's such a disservice to a lot of young people who it's literally just taking metrics, and it takes nothing into consideration of your daily habits or your muscle mass. I'm 92 right now, but you know I'm a much more heavily built muscular guy. But according to that, I'm obese.
Yeah, it's the really idea sad. The idea of modern science. They have a baseline, and everyone has to fit in that baseline, and doesn't take into consideration people's lifestyles, genetics, family history.
Yeah.
Which they try to say that they do as a GP. A GP will always say they take those things into consideration, but then they use a standardized version of assessment for medicine to put everyone into this pigeonhole of this is where you should be.
Yeah, yeah, they do. No, and I do want to touch on just with the big benefit of the carnivore diet as well. We're cutting out the seed oils. So have you gone into that, or do you hear much about that? You know that?
See, I researched seed oils about a year ago, and I really tried to get off the junk foods and anything processed, really, because it's bloody and everything. It's so hard-pressed to find something that's not in.
Baby formula, white bread.
Everything. Absolutely everything. It's actually a game now I play when we go do the Saturday morning grocery shop, and the wife and I'll grab something random off a shelf as I'm walking, and I'll give myself 5 seconds to find the seed oil, and I usually get it in one or two. But yes, seed oils, and they retain in your body fat from anywhere from 5 to 7 years.
Correct. Yes.
Horrifying.
Horrifying. But here, and also they've done, adipose tissue studies to see, you go back 100 years, we were like 3% seed oil in our fat. Now it's like 30-40%, right? And if I can just go on, like keep on the seed oil aspect here, my way of understanding this. So when we were hunter gatherers, all right, and we're hunting for the food. Sometimes we don't have food for a few days, so that's the fasting. Great. Puts you into hyperdrive. The body starts to eat itself. Many wonderful benefits. But when did we consume the seed oils? When we're hunting for the animal, we might find some nuts and berries, some vegetables, and we would eat them. And that would send a signal to the body, hey, there's no food around. So the body's going to hold on to the fat. Now, think about that. If we're consuming seed oils in every single thing in our modern day diets, we're constantly sending the signal to the body that because we are the same humans we were 1,000 years ago, there's not enough food around. So the body is holding on to that excess fat, thinking we're looking for the animals to eat. And because once the hunter-gatherers finally found the animals, obviously they eat and enjoy all the fat. That's all the calories, the good calories, and the body gets the other signal to lose the fat. Food is plentiful. That for me was a big part.
And this is what I think gives the keto diet kind of, I think, is almost like the gateway into carnivore. That
correct.
It makes sense, because if you are a hunter-gatherer society, those fruits, those nuts, those vegetables, which would have appeared in the wild, are only seasonal. And what do we do as modern-day humans? We farm all year, 365 days a year. We freeze it. We have it set aside. We're eating foods that naturally we would have for a very limited period of time throughout the year.
That's true.
At a time, like you said, which you would be taking in when there's no other food sources around. Or you'd supplement what you'd have.
And if you want to try to test this theory, just go watch any survival show on Netflix. What's the very first thing they look for? Some sort of animal. You know, they don't go looking for nuts and berries. They look for what's going to have the most calories to sustain them. So that's why when people, I know some people are really big advocates for vegan, vegetarian, and so forth, but go throw them into the wild for a little while and see how long you would last. I mean, if you went into the Australian bush, I don't know what you're going to eat unless it's an animal. I honestly, it would be one of the toughest things. And then the other aspect is most plants you have to cook. If you don't eat them cooked, you're going to have stomach aches and probably food. I mean, you'll get quite sick. You can't even eat potatoes raw.
It's not like we were given incisors to tear apart broccoli. I'm sorry. We've got incisors and canines for a reason.
And I used to eat a hell of a lot of broccoli because apparently broccoli increased your testosterone as well. So I used to really hammer that.
Oh, the amount of broccoli I ate just to try and get gains at the gym was a ridiculous amount. It's just disgusting to think back of it. Now, just to quickly go back, because we're going into the field of ancient
I
humans, how
realize.
they developed. That's okay, because that's something I wanted to go down anyway. But before we jump into that, what were some of the big misconceptions you felt you encountered when you started this journey?
You mean on in health in general?
In health related to carnivore. So I'll just go through some of the main buzzwords that I tend to hear when I talk to people about my diet, or they question me by, why are you only eating meat at work? So
Yeah,
co-workers,
wonderful.
family. So these are the big ones I see. It's high fat. It's high sodium. It can lead to increased development of heart disease. It can
Well, we
lead to
kind of
high
covered that
cholesterol.
one.
We've covered
Yeah.
that. And lack of science-based backed benefits.
Well,
They're
that
the
I
big
think,
ones I hear.
well, the lack of science-based benefits, again, like a lot of all this science that we're using now has only been really put together in the last, I don't think it's even the last 100 years, because I've got medical textbooks that talk about a high-fat diet, which are 40, 50 years old, right? So I think the history's there, the evidence is there if you go back in time. And then the simplest thing is try it yourself. If people are doing this for years, well, what's the harm of you doing it for a week or a month to see the results you get yourself? And that's really the only way you're going to prove to yourself, I think. It's just to take the risk, because I know it's a bit scary. Like for me, when I first learned that you could skip breakfast when I was 19, I remember that so well because I just did not, I couldn't fathom that. I really couldn't. That was my first time breaking out of that system.
Yeah, it's an absolute mind melt when you realize that what you've considered to be the mainstream, the way of doing things, can be flipped on its head and there's no major repercussions from it. Like I said, something as simple as fasting until midday or after 11 o'clock, whatever it be, that intermittent fasting idea, you don't die of starvation. You don't get super hungry. Your body adapts to it.
Hunger's not a thing that continually increases. It actually dies off. It's a little bit complicated if you're actually eating a high sugar diet. I have had these. My mum used to get them a lot. When you have carbs in the morning, you get sharp pains. You almost have to eat something. Have you had that before? You know what I'm referring to?
When I used to eat
Yeah,
breakfast all the time.
fair enough. So that's actually because when you have a high amount of glucose in your system, your body can't tap into its natural fat stores. So there is an adaption phase that does need to take place there. But I just want to share something else cool and
Yeah, go for
my
it.
way of thinking of this, right? And this is because I like to keep things simple. Otherwise, no one can know what you're talking about. So I like to keep things simple and then put it into an easily understandable way. But you know what a Mac is? You know what a Windows is, right? Two completely different operating systems, but they're both computers. So if you try and put Windows programs onto a Mac or vice versa, they don't work so well. You can do it, and you can use the compute. You can use a Mac operating system with Windows programs, but it's not going to be the most optimal. Well, I kind of understand that the same way as plants and animals. Plants are a completely different biological structure to humans. So yes, they have all the good stuff in there, but it's in a different bioavailable system or operating system. So your body has to work extra hard to extract it all. I mean, even something as simple as vitamin C. Think about it. If my parents have been eating just meat for 6 years, why don't they have scurvy? Because naturally the body adapts and can extract all the vitamin C that it needs from red meat or meat in general. And then the other, sorry, I remembered another one. Including plants and animals, what do we want to do? We want to grow up and reproduce, right? So animals, what are our natural defense mechanisms? We have hands, feet, we can run, we maybe have claws or teeth. Well, what do plants have? We never think about that. But they don't want to be eaten. Fruit is different, but plants like broccoli, potatoes, capsicums, whatever. Well, capsicums you could call a fruit, they have seeds. But yeah, my point is, well, they have chemicals inside them. Notably oxalates. Spinach, kale, absolute worst advice putting them as health foods. They are full of oxalates, which are like little crystals that end up, they could cause a world of problems. When I eat kale or spinach, I get the worst cramps you could ever imagine. It disables me. And that happened once because, again, I was cooking kale in the oven for health benefits, and it put me into bed. So that, I just wanted to share those because those are two important ways that I helped to I came to an understanding of why, yeah, eating meat is really the most suitable way for me, at least, to function.
Yeah, it's all the pieces coming together for me. And you mentioned before the idea of how the advice around types of food has changed over time, and it's not that long in the game that that advice has kind of come in.
Correct.
It all kind of, as a conspiracy theorist, naturally, I found this out, that it all comes back to Rockefeller medicine and how the Rockefellers were so instrumental in creating the food pyramid.
Yeah.
And think about just our educational period in Australia. How many times has the food pyramid changed in the past 20 years, 30 years? But from its basis, it's always been heavily focused on carbohydrates based on grains.
Yep. And then those grains are seed oils, effectively.
Yes, exactly. And this all comes back to what I think is an even more ancient game plan that the Rockefellers, the establishment, kind of tapped into because it works. It works so well. So this brings us into the idea of how our anthropological research, our history as humans, if we go back and we look at the examples of comparable civilizations, we can see the benefits versus the negatives depending on diet base. So I'm going to point out a couple of examples. First, let's go all the way back to Cro-Magnon man when they first emerged some 40-odd thousand years ago. The modern anatomical human, our ancestors, essentially just us, just the first yep. version of us. These yep. ancient ancestors of ours were physically superior to what we are today, just the average person back then. Stronger, faster, heavier hitting than we are.
Well, they had greater, their entire life.
Exactly. They had greater bone density, larger cranial capacity, and on average, their teeth and jaw structures were greater than what we are today. Essentially, mm-hmm. modern-day humans, based on what my theory would be, the diets we've slowly been introduced to, are the domesticated dog versions of Cro-Magnon.
Yeah, I haven't heard anyone put it like that, but I think you're pretty on point.
So yeah. if we go down this continued trend of seed oils, complex grains, heavily yep. processed foods, I often wonder what humanity is going to look like in a few hundred or a thousand years' time. Will humanity be the pug of that evolutionary chain? We go from Cro-Magnon to today to some kind of hideous human feature in the future where our jaws are so small, we have sunken faces. What could we possibly look like? It baffles the mind as to what the poisons are doing to us on a genetic level evolutionarily.
Well, just on the pug aspect and the jaw, I mean, chewing meat helps develop that entire jawline, which then helps your breathing. You know, it's all connected. That's a very important point because I know a lot of people now, well, it's becoming more relevant that young men are struggling with jaw, well, they don't have the defined jaw. And if they just ate meat, especially from a young age, and you worked the system as it's supposed to be worked, they wouldn't have those issues.
Well, you look at ancient man. Ancient man didn't need braces. Their jaw yeah. was big oh, enough to support okay. their teeth.
So you just touched on something so important, right? And I'm from a farm, so hey, if an animal gets hurt, well, if I didn't have modern medicine, you'd have to survive anyway. So I hope you pull through, right? So you got to think about that. Everything, like humans can survive some incredible injuries, all right? So if something's gone wrong, and braces, for example, if we really needed braces since we've always existed, I don't think we would have ever gotten this far. So there's no, things no, that we're no. doing that are resulting in modern medicine is trying to fix, but it's a result of our habits. Like us sitting down all day, that's not a great thing that we're doing. So I bought a standing desk and so forth, but that's a great point. You've got to always remember, if you were in the wild or you were just living how we used to live, you would have had to survive this. You would have had to get over that cold, so forth.
This is the idea that we have such cavity teeth issues is not just based on diet, but because our jaws are less defined and less robust now, it's almost as if our mouth isn't big enough for our teeth anymore, and that's why you see this constant battle from dentists saying you need to realign your teeth. They're going to grow in the wrong way. Now, is this more a epigenetic cause of the foods we've encountered, the lack of muscle and jaw structures because we're not eating meats anymore that would have defined our physical structures over time? I think that's more akin to what's going on than anything else.
Well, the only fillings that I've had, and I'm so upset. This is honestly, I'm so upset about this, was when I went on, I got salt. And a rock came out of the salt, and I crunched on the rock and chipped my teeth. Otherwise, you know, no fillings or cavities.
Man, if you only everyone could be so lucky. But the oral health is such a big determining factor in other aspects of your health as well.
We're learning this more and more. Yeah.
It's my sister-in-law is a dentist, fantastic dentist, and she will often go to those little throwaway little factoids or notes that, you know, this could actually impact this. This could, in research, is being a leading cause of that. But like all other forms of medicine, it's got its own kind of bias in what's considered mainstream science and modern academia. But I don't want to go too far down that path.
Of course.
Let's go back to the anthropological side of things. So we've got the ancient man, how we were, what the proto-human was supposed to be compared to what we are now. Let's jump forward a little bit into civilizations. You almost saw two polar opposite civilizations existing at the same time. And I'm going to use two examples. The Huns, so the people of the steppe, versus the Roman Empire. Huns were...
We should almost throw in China there as well.
Which, yes, I was going to say the Mongolians and China, because that's always like the Eastern version of that. So the Huns and the Mongolians, steppe people, they did have some animal husbandry and goats and horses and that type of thing. Heavily animal protein-based diet, so much to the point that they were hunter-gatherers, they didn't have crops, they didn't do anything like that, that if they were in a battle situation where they ran out of food, one of the military tactics to stay alive was they cut a small slit on the side of their horse's neck and drain some of the blood out and sustain themselves on that.
They did this in Arabia as well. My grandfather, he's got the knives they used to do it with. He used to cut the camel's throat, drink the blood. But steppe people even further, I mean, their entire life, well, I think I'm right in saying they were pretty nomadic.
Yeah, that's it. They're nomadic people.
Right. They were moving with their animals, which was their livestock. But it's not just them. There was the barbarians that the Romans... Think about it. The Romans used to talk about the barbarians who lived in Germania as being some crazed men, absolute terrifying beasts. Well, they just farmed animals. That was all they ate. They didn't have crops, you know. But there were hundreds of thousands of these men and women, right? Because basically all they did was reproduce and farm the animals. But they were the most fearsome men of the time.
Yeah, well, this is where it comes to, that what we deem to be the civilized cultures, the Egyptians, the Romans, the Greeks, the Chinese, these are all cultures who did make massive advancements in their knowledge and their capacity to have
100%.
Extra spare time to do things, because they did cultivate crops. They created grains. And when you create those types of foodstuffs, you get additional time to put into architecture, into culture, to arts. Those things naturally develop because you have less time that you need to hunt or butcher animals, that type of thing. But it has its own side effect. What we saw was from the advent of the implementation of grains, that's when you started to see teething issues with humanity. You saw the first indications of teeth rotting and plaque and these types of things really start to ramp up. You saw cultures which at the start of their rise to power were military powerhouses, were very strong, dominated the world. But it got to a point where it was almost if the food that was sustaining them, it was enough to get them by, it filled their bellies, but wasn't enough to put fuel in the engine. And you saw that complete opposite with the Germans, with the Gauls, the Visigoths, the Huns, the Mongolians. They had that. They were like running on turbos. They were diesel engines, like a locomotive. They were bats out of hell coming down on these these grass-fed humans, essentially. All grains essentially are bioengineered grass forms.
Yep.
We were eating a herbivore diet as a civilization. And who ends up winning? The people that are still living the most simple, pure life of eating red meats.
Well, what's the most important? Like, you need protein. What's the most important? You know, muscle is an expensive resource. The people, I mean, a lie from the bodybuilding thing. If you don't have your protein every few hours, you're going to lose muscle. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because how could we have possibly survived, right? The body's last aspect of you that it's going to lose is the muscle. It's the most valuable part. And so these war machines of Rome, Egypt, and so forth, well, if the men are not capable, strong men fueled with meat, well, they will fail. And they all did fail. At least now we have technology that kind of replaces it. But no, I think that's a very, very important point that you brought up.
And it comes back to the idea, you gave that great analogy of your parents not needing vitamin C and they haven't died of scurvy yet. Well, you look into the actual accounts of the British Navy in particular, even the Spanish, the biggest cause of scurvy wasn't the lack of fruits and vegetables. It was the lack of meat on board the ships. The meat wouldn't last as long.
Yeah.
And the breads would. They would were sustained mostly on breads and grains.
Well, I didn't know that. There you go. That's pretty cool. Fascinating.
So we've seen these accounts now in history. If you dig a little bit deeper, you see that some of the strongest empires or cultures to come out of the woodwork, dominate history, are renowned as the barbarians, the golden hordes, the people that came in and really gave the air quote civilized world a kicking for a while, the people that lived the most common back to source lifestyle. And it was something as simple as moving into animal husbandry and not needing the crops and the fields to go with it. They were nomadic. They were highly mobile. They kept moving. They were moving for a reason because they were following the wild game more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're sustained by your animals, you need to sustain the animals as well. And what do they eat? They're eating the grass. So just like we do on the farm now, we need to move the cows every week or so from one paddock to another. We call that regenerative farming now, mm-hmm. but it's effectively migrating, you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to keep them well fed or you won't be fed. That's the issue.
Exactly.
So those polar examples, the Mongols, the Chinese, there's a great example from Genghis Khan in the 12th century when he surrounded one of the Chinese cities. And it's said that the Mongolians sat out, they waited out the Chinese who were fully provisioned in this city. They had their rice, they had their grains, they had all their foods in there. And the Mongolians outlasted them, and they were just a standing army. Yeah. They didn't have supply trains coming in. They just rocked up with their weapons, whatever they had in their satchels and their bags, and they waited out an entire city who ate itself into starvation.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading something about this. It was only this year I was reading about this, and they were talking about the Chinese were fed to simply gruel. It was just porridge, and then you've got these protein-fueled barbarians who are the Mongols. I mean, you can see why the Mongols were such a threat, because they're a small country compared to all of China, especially during the dynasties, right? China's enormous, massive armies, but the Mongols were a massive threat, and it would have come back to the warriors.
Exactly, and people often think that these barbarian hordes, these were the knuckle draggers, the cavemen of the time who were very dumb and couldn't do anything, but people neglect to realize your brain needs so much cholesterol to operate. Optimum performance within the human brain, the ability to think, to problem solve, is boosted and fed through cholesterol. Yeah.
So let me just go on that a bit more, right? This is so important. Every single cell in your body is encapsulated in fatty acid, okay? So if you're not eating fat, what is your body being made from? Or are you just degrading slowly? That's something I just, those simple things I like to just remember. Yeah.
It's a good note. And it kind of goes back to what you said about these people who live for extremely long periods of time or will have high cholesterol.
Yes, exactly. Because it supports every, your estrogen, your testosterone, your human growth hormone, and your brain, most importantly, every part of you. Modern dietary standards, modern medicine, it's to make us sick, passive, weak. No doubt.
Well, yes, and just to go back to that idea of problem solving, I'll give you a little story that I found out about Kukulcan, which was Genghis Khan's son. He went to one of the Chinese cities. It was walled off. Naturally, very high towers, war machines, things protecting it. They tried multiple times to take the city, couldn't do it. And just in a strike of genius, he decided to give them an ultimatum. I won't attack your city if you give me all the sparrows within your city. And the Chinese are like, these barbarians want to eat the small sparrows. These are parasitic birds. They're idiots. We'll give it to them. They rolled out all the sparrows. He set fire to them and let them go back into the city, which set the city on fire.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's cool. I
What
didn't
a
know that story.
fantastic problem-solving ability. I don't think could have been done without that red meat.
No. Well, the brains weren't working properly without it, so
No.
there's really
Unreal.
so much you can draw on history for where we are right now. You know, you've got to remember most of the technology we have, including the communication services we're using right now, we only developed that not even in the last 100 years. So don't think that we're so advanced and so special that we've figured it all out, because we're still effectively monkeys with new tools. We have no idea the consequences of where we're going with all this, but we're just simply making things easier and adapting and learning. But there is so much wisdom and there is so much that our ancestors have figured out that we should be applying right now because, well, humans have been around for a long time, right? So, we got this far without all of our modern advancements. So there's a lot we can learn.
We absolutely have to, and it's not the idea of history repeats itself, but it certainly rhymes, and we have to learn from those rhyming periods in time. Look at the major empires, which have all had this great span of time, but ultimately collapsed. They were all empires heavily driven on crops, grains, wheat, all these types of foods, which, yes, you can plant, you can keep for long periods of time, but ultimately, when that food source disappears or is under strife, the empire collapses. And what do
It
you see
does.
as one of the biggest places in the world that produces grains? The Ukraine at the moment. And
Yeah, I thought you were gonna.
we're seeing parts of the world which are going into starvation mode because those central grains, air quotes, aren't getting to these countries anymore. Particularly North Africa. There's a lot of starvation going on there for people because they've been kind of conditioned into thinking that their diet has to sustain on that. And I understand a lot of these North African countries, they're poor, they require a lot of aid, so these foods are cheap and abundant for them. But it's not just them, it's everyone in the world's being conditioned to think we need highly complex grains and carbohydrates when we really don't.
Correct. I mean, we have been. Just on the Ukraine situation, you know, you would have heard about them, and it was all in the news about the depleted uranium shells. You know, that would I don't believe they were actually used, or at least they were destroyed before they were used. But that is such an idiotic idea because you're going to destroy the most fertile land in the entirety of this planet.
It's like
Because once
salting
they,
the earth with
yeah,
radioactive.
precisely, precisely. You know, so yeah, Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe, they say, and I guess most of the world now supporting Africa.
That's it.
But yeah, we have a real, really big challenge because you look at how hard veganism is pushed. I mean, we've just had announcements in the news coming for climate change reasons to reduce red meat, but you see, it's a constant attack. And yet, if people are thriving on just a meat diet, then someone's got it wrong somewhere.
Especially if their health is outperforming all other advice from the medical system. If people are finding real results and finding
Well,
that conditions are being lessened and they're living abundantly and in good spirits and they're happy, they're thriving as individuals, they're waking up not in pain, not inflamed.
big one, not inflamed.
Anecdotally, there's a lot of people who are turning around diabetes with this. I'm not a doctor, of course, but
Yes.
these are some of the terms that we hear.
Well, diabetes type 2 is reversible because it's a consequence of your body becoming immune, desensitized to insulin. So stop feeding yourself so much insulin producing foods.
It's like rebooting the system, isn't it? Like your
Yeah,
body
it
has an
is.
operating system, you have to reboot it, hard reset it, and things kind of sort themselves out.
And have you heard of type 3 diabetes?
I haven't.
Alzheimer's.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's inflammation. Again, if your brain is going to be actually failing if it doesn't have enough cholesterol. Yeah, just look that up. It's that's what they're starting to call it.
Wild. I'm going to have to look into this. So this
Yeah.
brings us to the roundy up part of this conversation. It's the new guard, the new world order, whatever you want to call these nefarious people who push all these agendas in science and society. They're taking the ideas of the old guard, so the empires of the past, the people who put the peasants under serfdom and fed them grains and breads to keep them satiated. We're moved into this modern age where we're getting synthetic versions of everything. So synthetic
Yeah.
proteins,
Yep.
plant-based meats, all these types of foods which aren't natural that are given up as the alternative. And like you rightfully said, the new boogeyman isn't some kind of outside empire attacking us. It's us. We're the bad
Yeah.
guys. We're creating the CO2, supposedly. Those cows that are in our paddocks are creating too many farts and kind of heating up the atmosphere. That's the lie they spin
All of a
us.
sudden.
All of a sudden, right? It's never done that before when there were just
Yeah.
herds of thousands of these things roaming around. But they're really pushing the idea that red meat is not only immoral, but it's bad for the environment. And this is the push they're really doing now.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, I just think it's so silly. The ice, Iceland just had a volcano erupt. That created the emissions of 2 years equal to what humanity's done. So as soon as I see something like that, it's kind of like, I for me, it's so obvious to not be a concern. But yeah, I mean, I don't know where to take this. But yeah, we are the carbon they want to reduce. We are aware of that.
And it's the same thing. It's not looking at cycles or trends throughout history and saying, okay, well, what caused the spike in global temperatures then? Because there were megafauna getting around, there were large animals, the herds of thousands of these beasts getting around at any given time in greater populations than they are today. Why did they not cause a global warming event?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like simple facts. Like, do you know what percentage of the atmosphere is actually CO2?
It's like I've seen a great equivalent. It was an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and they used a small drop of food dye in it, and you
Yeah,
don't even notice it.
it's 0.04%. And then you actually look at the greening of the Earth. It's actually been increasing these last couple of years. So the Earth is getting healthier, or at least the green is increasing.
It's almost a
So
rounding error if it's 0.4%.
yeah, nearly. So it's a massive challenge that we're all being presented with, because the institutions have failed us here, and they're continuing to lead us down a path that is going to have, well, it'll be generational consequences, probably as we are somewhat already experiencing. We know that for men, fertility is at an all-time low. Men, I mean, if your testosterone's not high, you don't feel like doing anything. I mean, that's one consequence, and that's one side effect of our modern diets. Men are being weakened massively. I mean, I read once, 100 strong men will conquer a nation. So, it's not just men, obviously, it's women. Everyone is capable of great leadership and making change. And so, having these conversations and just being a representation of health yourself, you can inspire others and lead others, because I think that's where we're at now. The new guard, if that's, would you refer to that as like us? Am I right to say that?
I would say the new guard would be those who are trying to run things. They're just the new
Oh,
version
okay.
of
The
the
new version of the old guard.
old, yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Well, what would you classify us as?
We're the true humans, I'd say. We're the reality of what things should be.
that's fair. And well, yeah, exactly. Well, we just need to be a representation of what a real human is supposed to be, and people will naturally see that. You'll see some vegan experts or these medical experts. Most of them are overweight. Like, I would never go to a PT who was overweight, because he's obviously not living what he preaches. It doesn't make any sense to do that to me. The first PT I had was 2 years ago, and it was because he had bigger legs than me. And I thought, this guy might give me some good pointers. And he did. I learned quite a bit from him. I really valued that. It was the first time in 8 or 9 years that I had a PT.
It's such a weird thing that you could possibly go to someone for health benefits. And even you could say that about doctors. Why would you take health advice from a doctor who's larger than you are and has a lot of body fat? And they're telling you you need to go on to some kind of diet. And it
Yeah.
doesn't pass the pub test.
No. And again, keep it simple. Yeah. And then doctors themselves are, they give you band-aids. They don't solve the root cause ever, I find. Like my mother, she had take indigestion tablets for 25 years. Went carnivore. She hasn't had to take them for 6 years now. Why couldn't the doctors help her figure that out for those
Exactly.
25 years?
Exactly. And I think there's some very big names in this kind of field that have been bringing this to light. Joe Rogan was one who went carnivore for a period of time. Jordan Peterson, exclusively red
Yes.
meats. He
Yeah,
and
I
his
didn't know
daughter
that.
cleared up a lot of their health issues that
Yep.
couldn't be diagnosed or fixed rather through modern medicine and drugs. And that's the idea. They want to treat the symptoms and not the cause. It's never finding out the root cause of something and adapting your lifestyle to prevent those things from happening. It's all about how do we mask the pain? How do we keep a lifelong customer to the medical
Yeah,
establishment and big
exactly.
pharmaceuticals?
And that's why I've been saying more recently now, I really think we're in the most corrupt period of human history, because we are so totally conditioned to the system and then trusting of the system to provide the band-aids to our issues, of which the system caused.
Yeah, we've grown up in a time where they've perfected the method through thousands of years of using this weapon against us, but they've got the technology to really ramp it up. They've got
Well,
that
it's
next level now.
they have, but it's also gone so long now. We're people who are, no one knows they're in the system. The doctors don't know they're doing the wrong thing. That's
exactly
why it's so hard, because people aren't naturally evil people. People are good, I believe, at the core. Because remember, none of us could ever survive unless someone loved and cared for us to become an adult. So I think humans are good. And so people are trying to help each other. They just don't know they're giving the wrong advice.
Yeah, exactly. It's killing people through kindness, unfortunately. They think they're doing the right thing, but unfortunately they're misguided themselves, or they think they're following the mainstream establishment's idea of what should be done, when it should be really the opposite in reality. We've got this situation where the world is almost like the prison that we don't know we're in, and that's the greatest prison to have, a prisoner who doesn't realize they're in a prison.
Yeah.
And we've got that through societal norms, the way they're going, the way we should eat, the way that we should be eating to save the planet, all these things that are put upon us, even on a psychological level, are forcing people down these routes. How many of the extreme vegans do you see going out, and they're really trying to appeal to the humanity of animals' lives and pain and suffering of animals, when the average person like myself, who's a hunter, I go out, I absolutely respect the animals that I shoot and I eat.
Yep.
Not just for the sport
always,
of things. It's for the sustenance they provide me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always the case, isn't it? I know. I think they're just usually they're younger as well when they're first getting into this, so they're a little bit disconnected from reality. But that's, again, the consequence of people not being, or there was children in the UK didn't know that chicken nuggets came from chickens. So it's the education. We need to inform people. Like the Lion King, it's the cycle of life. That is really where I go back to.
Well, that's the great point, though. We are in like one of the most dangerous points in history that's corrupt and evil. But at the same time, the genie's got out of the bottle for them, because arguably, as a human species, we've never been more informed and capable of finding the information for ourselves than ever before.
That's a very good point as well. And we have the internet to thank for that. And so that's why it's so important to preserve our ability to communicate and have that free communication. So
And just on that, like, we've got these alternatives coming out like blockchain, but what's the big focus at the moment? We've got all these people who are living alternatively, trying to pull themselves away from, say, the political system, trying to live as sovereign citizens or free citizens, whatever you want to play, live outside of the system or less dependent on as possible. You get to the idea that people are starting to create and understand healthier ways of living, and people are sharing this on a large scale. People, that momentum's building. What suddenly comes out globally, 2024 is the year of misinformation and disinformation. Mm-hmm. They're coming after reality and truth of the world. They are ready to dictate what is truth and what is not. And that is a dangerous place to be in.
Yeah, but that's the fight we're at right now. So I know some people want to disconnect from the entire system and so forth, but we also exist within the system. And humans will always build another system around us, right? So I think it is a responsibility that falls on those who are aware to engage with the system and work with the system to help create positive change, because nothing has to be the way that it is. It really doesn't. You just need to have enough people, which is slowly the growing trend, that agree with you, and then you can make any change you want.
Yeah, it's the idea that democracy is really, it's mob rule. And the dangerous part of democracy is you can have a ill-informed populace, a majority that can push the wrong idea and for negative results. And we see that with how socialism is built up over time in Western countries, that we're starting to see the whiplash of that now.
Yep.
And like you said, you can't just pull away from the system. You're always going to be in it. The idea of running away to the hills and mountains, building a log cabin and having your own little farm, they're always going to find you now. The technology, the laws, the system built around us, you can't possibly get out of completely. So like you said, how do you make it work for you? How do you alter it? How do you change it? How do you build up public perception in the right direction? And that's what we're doing right now, having those conversations and broaden people's horizons to information they weren't aware of. It could be one small facet of this conversation tonight that could send someone down a rabbit hole that could change their life. And that's what I love about these shows.
Yeah, exactly my perspective. You know, if it benefits one person, then it was worth my time.
So takeaways, what has been for you the greatest part of carnivore in your lifetime so far? What's been the best thing?
Yeah, easily. This morning I woke up at 4:30 and I'm just ready to rock and roll. You know, I'm not sleepy at the slightest, which I used to be. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm the guy who's done the full evolution, right? I just did it very early compared to most people, and I'm so grateful for that. But I go pretty nonstop. So most days I'll wake up between 4:30 to 5, and I'll go until 9 o'clock at night. I like to sleep early, get my full sleep. So the time that's given me back, for sure. I don't have those midday sleepy periods. I do usually eat my breakfast relatively early. Like when I'm away in Brisbane, right? And I travel quite a bit now. I have my kangaroo sausages, slab of butter, maybe 8 o'clock in the morning. And I don't need to eat until, well, frankly, I'll eat any time in the afternoon that suits me. And then that's it. I'll have my, what, it might be 3 p.m. and I might have my dinner. And then I have a meeting at nighttime, but then I'll just go to bed. I'm not hungry. I just rock and roll. So the time that it's given me back is the absolute most freedom that's the big part, the freedom that's given me back through the time. I don't worry about all these meals, about having to eat all the right sorts of foods so that I get all my nutrition. I know that I can thrive, and I am thriving on this diet. And I work out, in fact, almost every day, at least when I'm in the farm. And I don't feel that I suffer. And I've been doing it now for a long time, 6 years. Yeah.
Jesus. Wow. Good job. And lo and behold, you haven't dropped out of a heart attack. Look at
No,
that.
no. Neither have my parents, and they're in their 60s, you know? So,
What I'm finding so far after a little over 5 weeks is probably the quick one people always go to. It's the amount of weight loss, steady incremental weight loss, hasn't been dropped all of a sudden. It's been averaged at nearly 2 kilo a week or so. I'm down to nearly 10 kilos off my original weight.
yeah, that's incredible.
But it's not in a way that I feel sickly or I look gaunt or anything like that. You
No.
might find other diets or other fads. I don't feel hungry all the time. I'm satiated.
Yep.
And I'm
It's
not,
easy.
it's so easy. And it's
Yeah.
flipped the script of I've got to get up in the morning, I've got to have breakfast. Oh, it's 12 o'clock, it's lunchtime. Oh, it's between 5:30 and 6, time to have dinner. I eat when I'm hungry now, and I'm rarely hungry with the food I'm on.
Yep. And it's so important that, hunger is a good thing. The ghrelin, the hormone, actually helps the brain regenerate new neurons or something. I know it's a very beneficial hormone. Has a lot of effects. Again, because when you're hungry, the body starts making yourself into a superhuman so that you can find that food. But yeah, the weight loss for most people is obviously going to be the biggest benefit they can get. And it's sustainable, which is the most important thing. A diet has an end date. So don't tell me, no one should ever say they're on a diet because it's obviously temporary for your short-term goals. We all need to be looking for lifestyle changes. And that's what this is.
I've got to laugh about that because a work colleague said, "Is this your diet?" And I turned around with a smart-ass response, "No, it's a lifestyle change." And I felt like the biggest twat saying that,
Yeah, you would.
but it really is. And I could
Correct.
maybe see myself getting to a point where I'm almost keto because I've got this idea of if it's in season, it's within reason, like pulling the odd strawberry off a bush and having those when they're
So,
available for me.
important point. You're 100% right. I have no issue with that at all. Like, I still eat the bananas, the mandarins. The whole thing is to get your body back into sync with how it should be, right? Most people are overweight. So most people need to actually have some discipline to be strict for a period of time to get back to normal. But once you're normal, if you want to go out to dinner with your friends, have a few drinks, enjoy that nice meal, go for it. You should. That's what life is about. But if you feel like shit the next day, at least you know why.
Exactly.
And if you do it for a couple of days and you're like, now I've put on the back on the weight, at least you know how to go back. You see, it's empowering yourself. So yeah, it's not dogmatic by any means. I'm going to Japan next week. I'm going to eat as much sushi as I bloody well can because I love it and I want to experience all of their cuisine, right? But
When in
of
Rome,
course,
you have to live life. You can't just divide yourself and build walls based on a lifestyle of, no, I'm only ever going to eat red meat and that's it.
yeah.
Because I can see that's the argument you get from the opposite side. Oh,
You
don't
do
get
at
bored of
times,
it.
yes.
I haven't yet. I quite like it. I love having a huge dob of butter on a steak.
I think
It's
you'll find you won't
delicious.
get bored because the body is naturally, that's what it wants to sustain itself. So I don't get bored. I would always, I'm always looking more for that meat. I went to Nepal 2 years ago for a month, and thankfully they have a huge amount of meat, and that was the best part of their food anyway. So, and I was more than happy to eat as much as I can.
There you go, man. This has been a great conversation. I've been sitting on this for a while. A good mate of mine, he started on carnivore. about 3 weeks before me, and I saw some amazing health results from him and kind of kicked my ass into gear after my own health issues. And I'm glad I'm on this journey, and I'm really excited to see what's going to happen once I go back to my regular gym routine and see what can possibly happen and come out of that. But for the listeners, thank you for coming on. And where can we find your work? Where can they find you?
If you want to, on Twitter, Dunder_Viking. I'm on TikTok as well, same username. I'll keep the same username on all platforms, but I do get shut down.
Is it because you're topless a lot and you've got the guns out, mate? Is that why?
Could be the vax stuff. Who knows?
Yeah, he puts out some fantastic content, guys. A lot of awesome stuff at the moment. I think the West is really, really striving for going back to common no nonsense approach to life, common ethics, common courtesy, the things that we're really starving for as a society. This young bloke is putting out, so go and give him a listen. And on
Thanks,
that
Drew.
note, thanks for the conversation, mate. I'll catch you next time.
Will do. Loved it. Thank you for having me.
Hey, everybody, it's closing time. You don't gotta go home, but you can't stay here.